Yes, please.
Thank you, Chair. Your Excellencies, I begin by paying tribute to Bandana Rana, who has left her mark on the CEDAW Committee and the women's movement globally. Nepal now has a new opportunity to address historical conflicts in ways that will set an example to other countries in the subcontinent, including my own, Your Excellencies. In September of 2022, Nepal endorsed the National Action Plan on Women, Peace and Security, which also includes 1325 and 1820 in the text of the National Action Plan, with a specific focus on survivors of conflict-related sexual violence. Despite this, and despite the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and a Commission on Investigation on Enforced Disappeared Persons, impunity for sexual violence in conflict still persists. Although under the current bill, the definition of serious violations includes rape or serious sexual violence along with enforced disappearance and torture, the Attorney General could make a request for a 75% reduction in the sentencing for those convicted of serious violations. Your Excellencies, this could be a disguised amnesty. I'm also concerned about the prefix serious. As you may well know, all sexual violence is serious. There can be no amnesty for rapists. There can be no sentence reductions for rape. UN Security Council Resolution 1820 calls for zero tolerance of sexual violence and a categorical prohibition of sexual violence. Impunity for conflict-related sexual violence has been called history's greatest shame. I call it history's and the law's greatest shame. Nepal's long-awaited transitional justice law, a bill to amend the Disappeared Persons Inquiry, Truth and Reconciliation Commission Act, was adopted last year, and we congratulate you on its many positive elements. But will you go further to comply with the full panoply of the Women, Peace and Security Agenda? In 2019, the UN Security Council's 2467 resolution adopted an enlarged version of the Women, Peace and Security Agenda to embrace a survivor-centric approach that shifts the shame and stigma away from the survivor of rape to the perpetrator of sexual violence. And as highlighted in the Security Council Resolution 1960, it calls for psychosocial support and a special focus on the intersectional needs of those in rural areas and women with disabilities. UN Security Council Resolution 2106 also calls for engagement and partnering of civil society. So at this watershed moment, at this inflection point in your history of addressing conflict-related sexual violence, I would call upon you to address some of the more enlarged meanings that are enshrined in the full panoply of the Women, Peace and Security Agenda. And under the UN principles of reparations, under the UN basic principles and guidelines on the right to a remedy and reparation, we see that victims and survivors of conflict-related sexual violence must be provided with reparations, including reparations that can address structural disadvantages, especially those concerning women who are survivors of sexual violence. Now, the Human Rights Committee in the case of Purna Maya called upon Nepal to abolish the 35-day statute of limitations for filing a rape crime under the Mulupi Ayn. The Human Rights Committee considered that such an unreasonable short statutory period for bringing complaints for rape was a flagrant repudiation of the gravity of the crime of sexual violence. Your Excellencies, have you changed the law? But are you also providing reparations? I now go on to Article 5. The revised Nepalese constitution is heralded as one of the great constitutions of South Asia, enshrining special opportunities and protecting the rights of sexual and gender minorities in Article 12. In fact, it is the first Asian country to constitutionally safeguard the fundamental rights of sexual and gender minorities. I applaud the state party. But the harmonizing of the constitution with the CEDAW is a continuous journey. Your Domestic Violence Crimes and Punishment Act also breaks new ground at the de jure level. Domestic violence is defined as a form of torture in keeping with the boundary-pushing thinking and includes mental and financial torture. However, the categories of gender-based violence must be expanded in light of the Secretary General's common agenda. As one of the most disaster-prone countries in the world, buffeted by extreme weather events, food insecurity, strained water resources, loss of forests and biodiversity, Nepal's climate-related gender-based violence, including child marriage, is correlated to climate crisis. There is an urgent need to recognize the increase in violence against women as an outcome of climate disasters. And this must be included in your climate change action plans and the NDC implementation plan for the period between 2021 and 2030. Your Excellencies, I would now like to go to an examination of the Kathmandu School of Law Review. I am, as a law teacher, a supporter of law school's powerful role as crucibles for CEDAW analysis. The Kathmandu School of Law's review argues that one of the most common categories of gender-based violence in Nepal is technology-mediated violence experienced by women and girls in Nepal, including the creation of fake profiles in social media, fake information, and the indecent manipulation of photos and videos. This is indeed in line with the elements of the new Convention on Cybercrimes adopted by the United Nations on December 24th of 2024. This landmark convention criminalizes non-consensual dissemination of intimate partner images. Given the ubiquity and omnipresence of deepfake and synthetic media in all parts of the world, including in Nepal, how can you bring the law in Nepal in line with the new UN Convention on Cybercrimes? I go on to harmful traditional practices and stereotypes.